disk, but the halo of stars remains outside the disk, a skeleton left behind from the early evolution of the galaxy. Stardate, or Stardate Magazine, are productions of the McDonald Observatory, and at the University of Texas at Austin, our writer-producer, David Burt. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Jerome Blum.
I will not agree to another debate. The answer is no. I am not going to have any more debates. We don't need any more debates. I've spelled out my position. There will be no more debates.
We now return to the recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to the recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to the recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to the recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to the recording already in progress.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Carr.
Welche sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Thank you.
besser als ich.
Can't resist hearing this one more time, maybe a few more times.
I will not agree to another debate. The answer is no. Oh. I am not going to have any more debates. We don't need any more debates. I've spelled out my position. There will be no more debates.
And you can perhaps look upon that as the vow for the next 4 years, or maybe the next 8 years, or maybe from now on, no more debates. No more public discussion. And let's be damn proud of it. Okay. Good evening. The program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you up until midnight. It's 12 minutes after 10 o'clock. And quite a few things going on around here. Rather wild story just came over the teletype. Rather interesting, strange, bizarre. Police say a woman clad only in a bra and jeans was arrested and charged with robbery after she allegedly stole another woman's purse. That's right. Suffolk County Police Officer Frank Giolano, yes, that's what it is, spotted the scantily dressed woman running down Main Street in Bayshore at 10:45 this morning. The shirtless runner, 25-year-old Brenda G. of Bayshore, was being chased by another woman who told the officer that G stole her purse from her car. According to police, the robbery victim managed to grab G's hooded sweatshirt. But G wriggled out of the sweatshirt and kept running. The police officer saw G get on a bus, and he stopped the bus moments later and arrested her. G is charged with third-degree robbery and for three outstanding warrants for petite larceny, criminal possession of drugs, and loitering. Loitering? How do you loiter when you're robbing somebody? That's kind of weird. When you're running away, didn't seem like you'd be loitering. So that's a story that came over the teletype. Originally, they messed it up, and they sent it over with what they call a slug, and the slug said Long Island rape. Now, obviously, there's no rape in this story. It's a robbery, so they resent it, and they said, broadcasters resending with new slug. This is a story about robbery, not about rape. But it makes you wonder what's going through the minds of these people. They hear about a woman running with a wearing a bra and jeans, and they think rape right away. It's, I have a field day with that one, but we'll pass over it for now. Other news of the world: hoping to catch up in the polls, Democrat Michael Dukakis campaigned for votes today in California and Texas. He stood by the charge he made in this week's debate, saying in San Antonio that Republican George Bush wants the nation to stick to the status quo.
I will not agree to another debate.
I know. We all know. With 24 days left before Election Day, Bush says the presidential race is entering the home stretch. Bush campaigned in California today, stressing differences with Dukakis over gun control and prayer and the pledge of allegiance in public schools. A step up in KGB spying activities against the U.S. is predicted by a top CIA official. Robert Gates says the intensified espionage looks likely because of Mikhail Gorbachev's recent appointment of a new head to the Soviet spy agency. A London newspaper reports that the Soviets were convinced in 1983 that it was about to be attacked by the West. The Sunday Times quotes a KGB officer who worked for British intelligence for a decade. And the first ball of the 1988 World Series was tossed tonight by the nation's first lady. After Nancy Reagan left the field, the Los Angeles Dodgers took to the field to face the first batter from the Oakland Athletics. There's symbolism in there. I've missed it. USB Long Island weather is 12 degrees Celsius. That's the temperature. Comes out to be 54 on the good old Fahrenheit scale. Tonight we're expecting it to be fair, reasonable, low 45 to 50. Winds mainly southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour, but an occasional northerly gust at 60 miles an hour. Just an occasional one. Sunday, variable cloudiness, high in the mid-60s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, low around 50. And the outlook for Monday, mostly cloudy, with a 30% chance of late-day showers. High will be in the mid-60s. Again, 12 Celsius, 54 Fahrenheit here in Stony Brook. Stony Brook, Long Island. Stony Brook in Suffolk County, state of New York. A couple of things happened on this campus, or involving this campus, in the last week. Neither one of them is a particularly fortunate incident by any stretch of the imagination. The big one you probably heard about in newspapers and on television even, and you will be hearing about it in the future. The other one you may not have heard about, and that's the one that I find more upsetting and sadder. It's something that that happens occasionally in all of our lives, and we either choose to dwell upon it or to try to forget about it, depending on how we're shaped. Basically, it's concerning a student here at Stony Brook who was killed in an accident on Nichols Road, riding a bicycle, which so many of us do, and something that a lot of us take for granted, just riding back and forth to school and never thinking what can happen. But what's particularly ironic here, it's not so much the fact that this is something that so many of us do and something that could happen to anybody, but the really ironic part about this whole story is that the person to who this happened was profiled in the student newspaper Statesman on the very day that he was killed. And I'd like to just read that profile before we go any further. Rory Hackett is by far one of the most recognizable people on campus, well over 6 feet and with a stride that can span continents. Hackett can easily be spotted from afar. Up close, he is no less recognizable due to his somewhat eccentric style of dress. America is over-impressed by advertising, says Hackett, who is wearing a shirt with safety pins for buttons, a vest from a three-piece suit, and baggy cut-off shorts. He says a few major clothing manufacturers dictate what we should wear, and we're supposed to follow. Indeed, Hackett's independent style seems a gentle indictment against those of us who are so concerned with public opinion. In a campus of clones wearing brand-name athletic shoes with backpacks dangling from their shoulders, Rory Hackett is a breath of fresh air. Not that everyone appreciates his nonconformism. There are a lot of people, he says, who never see past the superficial. Someone looks different, and he's labeled as a jerk. Really ironic, because that's almost word for word what we were talking about on this program a couple of weeks ago. Hackett is a mechanical engineering PhD student who came to Stony Brook from Polytechnic Institute of New York, where he earned his master's degree. Before that, he received his undergraduate degree in engineering from Clarkson College after a short stint as a forest biology major. Hackett does research for his Ph.D. degree under Dr. J. Carney of the Mechanical Engineering Department, studying the flow of gases around the turbine blades. A turbine is a power-generating device which directs high-speed gases towards blades mounted on a wheel. The gases hit the blades and cause the wheel to spin, producing motion much like the wheel at a watermill. Hackett has constructed a test blade which will be mounted inside the Stony Brook wind tunnel. This blade can be moved to different positions on its base and is covered by over 100 pressure sensors, allowing pressure to be mapped throughout the surface of the blade. Other blades will be mounted near the test blade to study the effects of interference. The long-range goal of the research, says Hackett, is to better understand the flow of the gas around turbine blades in order to improve cooling to the blades. Turbines show improved performance at higher temperatures, but blade materials limit the temperatures which can be used. Metal blades melt and ceramic blades can crack due to the thermal stresses. By knowing where in the turbine blade most of the heat transfer from the gas takes place, it would be possible to direct coolants to that area, allowing higher temperature gases to be used. Upon graduation, Hackett hopes to work in the conservation field. Committed to preserving the environment, Hackett encourages others to become involved with social issues. "Don't go for the high salaries," he said. "Instead, attack a cultural problem." That was the article in this Thursday, October 13th, in the edition of Statesman, the student newspaper, written by Sergio Perez. And it was around 6 p.m. on that very day that Rory Hackett was riding his bicycle on Nichols Road, close to Mark Tree Road in the Center Reach, South Setauket area. And from what I've been able to find out, apparently what happened was a car driven by someone who was, I believe, 19 years old, not that that has anything to do with it. The car was blinded, or the driver was blinded by the sunset and could not see Rory and hit him at about 50 miles per hour. Really brings it all home, you know, because we live in such a conditional world. We can watch out for ourselves. We can keep things intact and try to keep from falling into the subway tracks and stepping on the third rail. But how do we know that everybody that we know and everybody that we care about is going to be safe? There's no way ever to know. And when someone comes up to you and says, "So-and-so just got killed," from that point on, there is absolutely nothing you can do. It's all over. That feeling of helplessness. Of course, there wouldn't have been anything you could have done unless you had some kind of a time machine. But when you realize this has happened, it feels like you should be able to just go back and fix it somehow. Make a phone call and just somehow do something that would prevent these horrible things from happening. But, of course, there's no way to do that. I don't know how many of us have actually had this feeling. I mean, for me, it hasn't happened all that often. I know there are some people that seem to be surrounded by such things. Tragedy at every turn, practically. Other people seem to lead some kind of a privileged life, although I put that word in quotes. People who never seem to have any sense even of the tragedy that is happening or the tragedy that can happen. And then there's people that kind of lead both. For a while, everything seems to be going okay, and then within the space of a couple of years, it all starts falling down. I'm reminded of the day that Reagan got shot, and perhaps it's a bad example because personally my friends are so much more important than Reagan. But it was that same feeling, walking into a dormitory and a friend of mine saying, "Hey, did you hear?" And I said, "No, what?" And he said, "Really? You didn't hear?" And I said, "No, come on, what?" And that went on for a few minutes. And finally, after a couple of threats on my part, he said, "Bro, Reagan got shot." And I said, "Oh, boy." It was that same feeling, you know? This thing happened, this bad thing happened, and everything from that point on was going to be a a reaction to it. So it's especially strange, though, that article should appear that very day. But I think that's a far better tribute than anything that could be said at this point. Because that article captured this person in the middle of their life and left us with something to think about, left us with something to remember. Don't go for the high salaries. Instead, attack a cultural problem. So, that's one bit of news that came from Stony Brook this week. And another bit of news that you've probably already heard about is something that occurred just about a week ago today, shortly after this program went off the air, over in a part of campus that we call Tabler Quad. It's a kind of a group of dormitories. And there was a party going on there. Party held by one of what are now many fraternities on campus. A few years ago, there weren't any fraternities. Now they're all over the place. And for perhaps the second or third time in a couple of years, some crazy people shot guns in a crowded location. They brought guns with them and they were shooting them. And in this particular case, it wasn't a BB gun. It wasn't a rifle. Would you believe an Uzi automatic weapon? That's what's going on. I'm going to give kind of a summary of the different accounts of this incident, because this is something that we just cannot ignore, and what I'd like to hear from people, especially people on campus, although I understand that all the heat and hot water has been turned off on campus this weekend, so a lot of people have escaped. But if there are people out there on campus, I would appreciate anyone calling in with their opinions and suggestions on what do we do? How do we prevent things like this? Are we doing something wrong? And by we, I mean the entire university community, not the radio station. I don't think we're inciting any of this. This is the account that appeared in Newsday on Monday, titled, Teens Terrorize SUNY Party, 8 Held After Shots Fired at Stony Brook. A group of teenagers terrorized hundreds of Stony Brook students at a rap music party early yesterday, meaning early Sunday, late Saturday night, firing several bursts from a semi-automatic weapon and slashing the face of a dancer who had been hired to entertain at the fraternity-sponsored event, police and witnesses said. There were no other injuries, police said. 8 people, none of them students at the State University of Stony Brook, were arrested later on Sunday in connection with the incident after police stopped a van on a central Islip street that matched the description of the getaway vehicle. The suspects also are accused of stealing a stereo system used at the party. As many as 600 people who had attended the party were milling outside the Tabler Quadrangle cafeteria. You know they're from off campus when they call it the Tabler Quadrangle. Tabler Quad, that's how it's said, folks. These people were milling about outside Tabler Quad cafeteria at about 2:20 a.m. when the shots were fired. Inside a fundraising party for a minority campus organization sponsored by the Phi Beta Sigma fraternity was just breaking up. The party included at least 4 groups of performers with club music upstairs and rap music downstairs, fraternity members said. Everyone started screaming and running, said Andrew Ron, the fraternity member. Hundreds of students fled in panic, some ducking into dormitories and others hiding behind campus police patrol cars, that ringed the perimeter of the quad but did not enter it. Meanwhile, inside the cafeteria, students crawled under tables and hid in bathrooms while the armed group of teens stole the stereo system a disc jockey was using for the party. The armed group then fled, possibly by bursting through the chain-link fence that barred the university's south gate with their vehicle, police said. The fence is closed at midnight, and officials speculated that the attackers had entered sometime Saturday night. Minutes before the shots were fired, police said, two members of the group attacked a rap dancer outside the cafeteria, slashing him in the face with a razor blade three times and stabbing him twice in the torso with a knife. Pedro Mojica, 20 years old, of Brentwood, was treated and released from University Hospital, police said. Neither Mojica nor any of his attackers were students, police said. His legal guardian, Bertha Davidson, said he had been hired by the disc jockey as a dancer for the party. She also said Mojica vaguely knew his attackers and had been robbed by them once before. Some students who witnessed the shooting criticized university police for waiting for Suffolk police to arrive before entering the cafeteria. Although fraternity members said they had called campus police at 1 a.m., university officials said they were summoned at 2 a.m., and that they arrived within 10 minutes. Suffolk police said they were called to the scene at 2:45 a.m., less than a half hour after shots were reported. Susan Risling, the university's assistant director of public safety, said campus police behaved properly in waiting for county officers. Since we are unarmed, we got to the general area, but not the exact location of the shots, she said. That would be a good way to get yourself shot. There was no alcohol served at yesterday's party, Risling said, and fraternity members had set up metal detectors to check guests for weapons. She said the fundraising party was open to anyone, regardless of their connection to the university. We're going to sit down and review the whole situation, but right now we haven't found any breach of policy, Risling said. Suffolk police agreed. As far as I'm concerned, the security was more than adequate. I'm more than satisfied with it, said Lieutenant John Jurash. Arrested were Scott Sharon, 21, of Central Islip, Melvin Payne, 17, of Central Islip, Mark Redmond, 19, of Central Islip, and Gregory Gray, 18, of Belport. Also arrested were Brian Stevens, 17, of Central Islip, Michael Levy, 18, of Bayshore, Lawrence Carter, 20, of Brentwood, and a 15-year-old juvenile whose name police did not release. All were charged with second-degree burglary and fourth-degree criminal possession of a weapon. Six squad detectives said a search of Payne's car yielded a .22-caliber rifle and a .32-caliber pistol. Redmond also is charged with second-degree assault and Payne with third-degree assault in the attack of Mojica. And that's the story from Newsday that appeared on Monday. And taking a look at the campus newspaper, Statesman. Visitors fire shots in Tabler. Police arrest seven for burglary and assault. A gunman with an Uzi-type weapon opened fire from a crowd in Tabler cafeteria after a party there late Saturday night, hitting no one but sending scores of partygoers running for cover, according to witnesses and police reports. Reports, skipping over some of the details here that we already gone over. Reports from witnesses and public safety records conflict as to the exact times of some of the evening's events. According to Hans Sherwood, the Dean of Pledges for Phi Beta Sigma, public safety was called at 1 a.m. to aid in crowd control for a large crowd that had gathered outside the cafeteria. A public safety car came and circled Table Quad with its lights on several times and then left, said Sherwood. Lieutenant Douglas Little of Public Safety said the first call from Tabler came in around 2 a.m. Little added that a car was sent and officers were there when the incident went down. party coordinators said they had begun to close the party down and were asking people to leave the cafeteria around 1:55 a.m. At 2 a.m., a fight broke out between men outside the cafeteria and quickly escalated as a bunch of guys jumped on one guy, according to Andrew Ron, a one-time Stony Brook student who witnessed most of the violence. One of the men involved in the brawl slipped away and reappeared with and fired a typical Uzi, according to Ron, who added that the gunman was dressed in camouflage gear and was soon accompanied by about 10 more people who came out of nowhere with guns. Everyone was screaming and running, said Ron of the people, as the first shot sounded. As the armed group moved inside Table Cafeteria, shouting, "Get the F and three dashes out," people hid under tables and in the restrooms, according to witness accounts. According to Little, Lieutenant Stryker reported gunfire at 2:43 a.m. from his car parked near Dreiser College. Little said a group of 50 to 60 students ran toward Stryker's car as the first shots were fired. Stryker slouched down and reported the incident as the students hid behind his patrol car. Little added, Uzi-type shots can be heard on public safety's tape of the call. They did not aim the guns at us at all, said Ron of the gunmen, one of whom entered the men's room and told those gathered there to get out of the building. Ron said the armed group did not single out and threaten anyone in the building. The gunmen allegedly took some stereo equipment from the cafeteria as they left. This only shows how much security and precautions we'll have to take next year, said Sherwood. He added that the fraternity planned to continue holding their annual homecoming event. University President John Marburger called the incident an extremely grave one. We cannot say what additional security measures are appropriate, Marburger said, adding that conditions for late-night parties will be reassessed. And those conditions have been reassessed. We'll tell you what has been done in just a couple of minutes. I'd like to focus on an editorial that appeared in that same issue of Statesman. And I should point out that Statesman is the considered the main campus newspaper here at Stony Brook, although there are others. Statesman comes out twice a week. And this editorial is entitled, "Campus Needs Proactive Security Plan. The violence following a party on campus this weekend forces the campus community once again to rethink university security. Each time there is a rape, shooting, or riot on campus, we have handled it as though it was an isolated incident. Each campus-shattering act is made out to be one that would not be repeated, one that never would have happened if one aspect of safety or security were handled differently. The Phi Beta Sigma fraternity that sponsored the party Saturday in Table Quad kept security tight. Fraternity members frisked and checked all who entered the building with a metal detector for weapons during the event. Their responsible preventative measures kept the party safe. Unfortunately, they could not control the activities of the partygoers after they left the walls of Table Cafeteria. The fraternity, in this case, took care of security at its event. The fraternity did its part, and that is all we can ask. However, the university must revolutionize its approach to campus safety. Unfortunately, college campuses are not immune to the plague of crime. A college campus is merely a smaller version of a much larger community. If there are rapes, murders, and other crimes outside the college, they will happen on a smaller scale on campus, too. This is the first realization we must come to. Crime is a fact of life, and we must learn to deal with its threat on a daily basis. The safety programs this institution endorses and supports should be based on this common denominator. Security measures should not be temporary and used only at specific times, but should exist as a permanent characteristic of the university. What the university needs is a policy on security that is all-encompassing. Anytime a large event is being held on campus, public safety should be informed and asked to patrol the area more frequently. In addition, the Suffolk County Police Department should be notified as to where the event is being held on campus. These two steps will increase the awareness of the authorities and make them more visible. In the event that trouble does arise, the response times would be cut as the location would already be known. As it stands, Suffolk County Police hardly know their way around this campus and often require a public safety escort to lead them to a specific spot. In an emergency, this time cannot be spared. This weekend's incident proves that sometimes their ability to get to a location in a short period of time could mean the difference between life and death. If traditional law enforcement agents such as public safety and police officers were to increase, the news would soon spread around and lead people from off campus to believe they are less likely to get away with any kind of criminal act and therefore not try anything. I'm just thinking how much that works in New York City. This is exactly the kind of deterrent that would have been helpful this weekend. Maybe if there were officers visible right at Tabler Cafeteria, nothing would have happened. At any large party or event, the people attending should be checked for weapons with a metal detector. Can you believe this, folks? A metal detector. If a weapon is found, the appropriate authorities should be called and the violator denied access. The incident this weekend proves just how prevalent guns are and how easily they can be brought onto campus. However, all this is still not enough. All nighttime student events, such as Tokyo Joe's, End of the Bridge, and parties should be restricted to students only. Non-students would have to be guests of a specific person residing on campus or be escorted by a commuting student. This would alleviate some of the problems that have arisen in the past with large numbers of off-campus off-campus people causing problems at university events. And maybe after all this, one could feel safe on this campus once again. A similar sentiment was voiced in Black World, which is a publication aimed at the black community, published bi-weekly. The recent violence which took place Sunday morning in Tabler Quad has the entire campus pondering over safety. The young men who terrorized partygoers after the affair left one person injured and thousands others in shock, nervous and afraid. Though the university setting traditionally is thought of as a place which crime does not reach, Stony Brook realizes, along with the rest of the tri-state area, that crime is a very real entity that occasionally wanders into the brook. Increased security must be imposed in order for us to feel safe again on campus. Since most of us are mainly concerned with our studies, we designate certain people to be responsible for our security, public safety. Sue Reisling, Assistant Director of Public Safety, said she commends the manner in which the situation was handled. She said the gunmen were arrested and the stolen property was retrieved within 2 hours of the first gunshot, all with no students injured. Next time, we may not be so lucky, though. We must reassess the policy regarding entry onto the campus and implement one that stresses preventative action instead of responsive action. Considering the circumstances, public safety officers were quick-thinking and probably did everything within their power to keep the situation from escalating beyond the point it reached. But time spent thinking about ways to thwart such incidents before they occur may prove the more astute plan. As minority organizations with scanty funds, we frequently need to advertise our events outside of the campus. Should a large off-campus crowd be anticipated, security and law enforcement agencies must not only prepare but prevent such happenings as the one in question so that no one's life and safety be endangered. And Black World did a survey of a group of students, asked them, how do you think the Tabler incident could have been avoided? 19-year-old psychology major says public safety should have been there just to show that there was some type of protection. A 20-year-old Africana studies major says, I feel that you can blame anyone for the incident. There is enough security for the party. A 20-year-old engineering major says public safety should have been there to keep the crowd down. Loitering in the area, maybe the conflict would not have occurred. 22-year-old mechanical engineering student says, having more security at the main gate could have prevented this incident. 20-year-old liberal arts major, that the off-campus people should have their cars checked at the main gate before entering the campus. 20-year-old psychology major, having Suffolk County police on campus during major functions. 18-year-old electrical engineering student, more police protecting the party, police with weapons. And, finally, a 21-year-old electrical engineering student. More security. Table cafeteria is a dark, isolated place for a party. Well, tell us what you think. 632-6901, if you're on campus, 2-6901. Especially like to hear from anyone that may have been there. Although we understand that quite a few people have left campus this weekend in the wake of this incident, but mostly because of the fact that heat and hot water has been shut off. We don't know why. 632-6901, if you're on campus, 2-6901, and we'll take your calls right after this. Power move on. Yeah. Speaking of Uzis. Public Enemy here on Brain Damage. Song entitled My Uzi Weighs a Ton. And I don't doubt the Public Enemy was being played at this party. In fact, I saw some of the advertisements for the party. And one of the slogans was Don't Believe the Hype, which of course comes from the latest Public Enemy album. This Public Enemy one was, I believe, the one right before that. And we're talking about violent incidents on campus. What can be done about them? Taking your phone call, 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, I was wondering if you saw that letter into the October 13th issue of Statesman.
I was going to get to that. That was Thursday's, right?
Yeah.
The letter about the public safety response.
Yeah, well, how he heard the gunshots at 3:30.
Uh-huh.
Called public safety and got no response.
Well, now, a couple of reports, the Newsday report, and I believe Statesman also mentioned that there were some complaints about the speed with which public safety responded. But keep in mind, public safety does not have guns. And I can understand why they would be a bit hesitant to run into a situation with guns. Now, one of the questions we're asking is...
Well, why did they wait until 3:50 to call Suffolk County Police?
I think it was... the report was that a call was placed at 1 o'clock in the morning, and Suffolk County Police didn't get there until 2:40. The way I understand it, the call at 1 o'clock was not about gunshots, and the delay with the Suffolk County Police was about a half hour. That's one of the reports I've heard. I've heard conflicting reports on that. Some people say that this whole thing would be solved if we just gave, you know, the campus police guns.
No.
I don't see how it could be. I really don't, because what would you have then? Do you think these people would say, no, we're not going to bring guns on campus because these people have guns? Somehow I don't think that's the mentality that criminals have. I think they would do it anyway and be prepared for a shootout. The police would also be prepared for a shootout, and the people in between would be the innocent ones. And that's got to be avoided at all costs. Of course, in a situation like this where something happens, the response has to be quick. No question about that. That's where we need improvement. But I don't think just blindly changing policy and giving guns to campus police when they... I can't think of a single incident that would have been helped by them having guns. I mean, theoretically, you could say it would be a deterrent, but there's no way to prove that it's a deterrent. It's like saying capital punishment is a deterrent to crime. How do you prove it? You know?
Yeah. Well, what about... No, what I'm calling about, though, is this whole thing with... the guy said, you know, first he heard it at 3:30. He called Suffolk County Police at approximately 3:50, and then they said that they were just called, and they responded 15 minutes later.
Uh-huh. Well, those...
That's ridiculous.
Those calls are public records, and anyone interested has the right to look at them. See when the calls were placed, and I believe they're recorded. I can't swear to that, though. I know Suffolk County calls are recorded.
Can you find that out for your next show?
I can try. But you see, that's another thing I wanted to discuss here, is campus media and why campus media is important in a situation like this and in any kind of a situation. It's good to see the papers, Statesman, Black World, and I'm about to get to the Stony Brook Press. It's good to see them reporting on this, but I think they have to do more.
Like
and,
what?
Well, I just think they have to be more aggressive, and you can sort of tie this to the national level. The government is always complaining about the press, harassing it, and making accusations and printing stories they'd rather not see. I don't think there's enough of that on this campus, because only through those actions can you get at the heart of the matter. By avoiding confrontations, avoiding printing stories that may get people upset, and I'm not saying resort to yellow journalism, but by avoiding doing what the media is supposed to be doing, you're not going to uncover anything. Things are just going to be one big public relations tool, and too often what I see in the papers here, particularly Statesman, is just reprints from the Campus Media Service, which is a national campus-wide type of service. Too often what I see in the Stony Brook Press is just complaining without really a knowledge of the facts or constructive approach as to how problems can be solved. Kind of a village voice approach, I guess you'd call it. And too often I see in Black World, it's just plain rhetoric.
I didn't hear too much on WESB on Sunday about the incident.
Well, that's another thing. We're certainly not immune from this. We're one source one major source of media here on campus. And what do we do news-wise? Very, very little. Now, you can't blame the structures themselves. You can't say Statesman is bad because of this. You can't say WUSB is bad because of this. What's bad is the fact that so few people want to get involved and want to pursue these things, want to pursue these stories and call administrators and call student representatives and pursue stories and try to come up with the facts and suggestions for improvements in the future.
Well, I know in my experience with people who have worked at, you know, the newspapers or the radio stations, they say they're pretty much going up against a brick wall and they're dealing with
trying
to get answers.
Imagine if everybody took that attitude from this level on up. It's the perfect scenario for those calling the shots. the media has a lot of power. Every form of the media, printed and broadcast media, television, radio, they listen, they hear, and people are affected by this, and it makes thoughts get generated, you know, in the public. So it's not entirely a brick wall. It may seem that way sometimes, and I felt that way myself, but it's not true, you know. And I think we need more of this. We need more questions being asked. We need the issue to be addressed almost constantly. And the campus is such a perfect place to practice, because people get involved in newspapers and radio stations here, might get involved in them when they leave. And we don't want people involved in national media that are just going to reprint press releases that come from the public relations office at Stony Brook. We want people that are going to look past that, look past the rhetoric. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we had a call, but I guess it went away. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. If you have a suggestion or a comment or any kind of input whatsoever, well, another thing that that Stony Brook students have long been accused of, and I can't really say it's not earned criticism here, but they have been accused of not being involved, not being interested. Let's find out. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi.
And you're on campus, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I can tell by your ring.
I was just I just wanted to comment that now when I walk on campus after dark, whether it's 7:30 and it's dark, I always take a friend. But what if, I mean, if we're attacked, what is he going to do if we're attacked with someone who has a gun or a knife or anything, or someone who's bigger than him? There's nothing that can happen. I mean, the basic problem is, like, how are the gates going to be guarded? If they're going to be manned all the time, it would be better, but it would be more costly.
And does that really solve the problem, just guarding, closing the entrances and having one entrance open and having a guard there? Does that solve the problem? I think people can walk onto campus from many, many points.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people could always come onto campus beforehand, spend the day on the university, and then conduct their crimes at night.
Oh, well, I was thinking more like 24-hour protection or something. That there's got to be a better way. We just have to find it.
Uh-huh. Well, I think we all have to be a little bit more alert. Obviously, the campus has to be better lit. A lot of pathways are kept dark.
Mm-hmm.
Lights are not replaced. I don't know why, if it's laziness or state budget problems or what, but whatever it is, we got to, you know, come off it and fix the damn things. Now, having the gate guarded late at night is, it may make it seem as if, you know, there is security. And I don't really think it's that effective. I mean, it gives that opinion, it gives that feeling, that outside look. But what does it do inside? I think it takes a public safety person off the job and puts them sitting at a gate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That person could be walking around
campus.
There's
no feeling of safety on campus, especially after one of these incidents. And then after the incident, they try and make things different, like the moratorium that's on now. Now, what's that going to do? It's going to stop events happening for 1 week, and then everything's going to go back to normal. Then
now,
something else will happen eventually,
we
and they'll have another moratorium or something, and it's just, they're not really trying to solve it. There was nothing changed after the incidents last year.
Now, we haven't mentioned the moratorium, so why don't you tell us exactly what you know about that?
Well, they canceled all the major events on campus, like the dance club Tokyo Joe's. They canceled that. They canceled the bigger events, and then they postpone them or cancel them. And there's no real, I don't see the real value in that, because they're not really, I don't think the incident, there's going to have another incident so soon after. And if there was, I mean, they should just increase security, not just cancel everything. That's not a way of solving the problem, it's avoiding it.
Do you think security here on campus has to be armed?
No, I don't think that would help anything at all, because, I mean, that's just, you're just asking for more trouble that way, because if someone's armed, if a person has a gun and they see an armed guard, what are they going to do? They'll be more likely to shoot than if they see someone who's not armed, who's trying to calm them down. It's more of a threat.
Uh-huh. So how do you prevent the situation from reaching the point where someone has a gun and is coming onto campus with a gun?
I think the best solution, one of the best solutions, is to have Suffolk County Police have to know where things are on campus, so when they get a call, they can come directly to that point. And that if you somehow, I'm not in the security business, but somehow get the security on campus to a higher level, like in general.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Is there much student involvement in security that you know of?
Well, the student, there are a lot of students in public safety, like with the walk service and just patrols and things, but they're not armed. All they have is a walkie-talkie. They don't even have mace or anything. They have nothing to help themselves. So, like, I know people who are working for public safety. They also man the desks at the front of the building that check people coming in. Now, that only checks the people at one entrance. It doesn't check people at the back entrances or whatever.
Yeah, people can take the train from the city and get off the train and just walk onto campus. It's that simple.
Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible to prevent access to a campus of, what is it, 1,000 acres or 10,000 acres? I don't know. It's a lot of acres.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, people can skydive out of the air. it's going to be hard to prevent people from getting onto campus. What do you think, though, of the idea of just allowing students at these parties?
Well, I think it might help some things, because most of the incidents that I've seen or heard of happening has been, you know, the non-campus, you know, non-students or people just from off campus in general are the ones who are having the problems with the, you know, on campus. But it also, that would hurt the people who are throwing the fundraisers or whatever, because
yeah,
that's, they count on...
That's something I read in the Black World article, and it said that minority groups have to advertise off campus. Why is that? Why must they get people from off campus to contribute to these groups? Why can't it be done on campus entirely? Isn't it for the campus community?
Yeah, but I don't know if the people on campus would be as inclined to go, because there is a problem with apathy at Stony Brook, and a lot of people don't, they might see a sign for a party, and if it's for a typically minority or a typically stereotypical party, they're not going to want to go if that's not there. Like, if you're one type of person, you see a party that's advertised that you have to pay to go to,
uh-huh,
and it's not your type of party or your type of people, you're not going to go in general. And for people at Stony Brook to actually go out and go to something, even if it's social, you have to almost, you know, beg them to come. So I don't think that it's, I think that it is a valid statement that they have they have to rely on off-campus people to come to these parties.
Uh-huh. So, what's your prediction? What's going to happen next?
Either the security will get better, or there's just going to be more incidents, and they're going to have to do something eventually, or Suffolk County Police is going to have to get more into what's on campus and learn more about the campus in general.
Are you an undergraduate?
Mm-hmm.
And, What are your friends' feelings on this generally?
Well, I have friends who are graduates and undergraduates. My one friend who's a graduate, she comes on campus every week, and after her mother heard about the incident, she said, you know, you got to wear pants, you have to put your hair up so that people don't think that they might not take you for a female if they're from a distance.
Oh, boy.
And then there's other people who they don't really seem much changed, but a lot of people are really worried, and they seem more concerned about making sure that if it's after dark, no matter what time it is, if it's dark out, you go with someone.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if that's going to help. If someone bigger than you is you know, comes up and attacks you, it's not going to make much difference if you're with someone or not.
Yeah, I think brains is what we need here, not brawn so much.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much for calling, and We'll see what the coming weeks bring.
Okay, bye.
Of course, we have Fall Fest coming next week. Do you know if there's Fall Fest?
Yeah.
There is Fall Fest.
It will happen.
Okay. We have a guest in the studio that knows about Fall Fest. And that's going to take place out on the athletic fields.
Yeah.
In the past, that has been advertised off campus. We try to get people from off campus to come to that.
Yes.
So I don't know what's going to happen if we don't want people from off campus to come to these things anymore.
It's a daytime event, most of it.
Uh-huh. There is nighttime stuff, though. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're selling tickets for those events at Ticketron. And basically, if you don't have a ticket for one of the events, people will be discouraged from coming on campus.
And I guess most criminals don't cater to Ticketron.
No.
Carrying Uzis. The thing that really bothers me, though, is the Uzis. I mean, it seems to be so easy to get these damn things. And they're submachine guns. Am I correct?
Yeah.
They're submachine guns. Now, why in the world... There was an article in Newsday a few weeks ago about these police officers that found these kids wandering around a train station trying to sell an Uzi with several rounds of ammunition. And what had happened, apparently, was these kids had gone to a gun store in Port Jefferson, very close to the campus here, Port Jefferson, and had bought an Uzi submachine gun. And the salesman had, friendly person that he was, thrown in some free rounds of ammunition. And what was especially frustrating in this case was that they could not find anything illegal. They hadn't broken any laws. Now, I don't know if you don't need a permit to carry an Uzi or something crazy like that. Could that be true?
Well, you should. I don't know.
It certainly sounds like it. But what I don't really understand is, why in God's name do people have to have Uzis to start with? What possible use, besides the kind of thing that happened in Tabler last week, what possible use can you get out of an Uzi submachine gun?
Well, you're defenseless to an Uzi.
It seems to be like a status symbol, almost. You know? I don't know. In fact, there have been incidents where Uzis have been found. I heard of one incident where an Uzi was found on campus. Wasn't being used, but it was found in a student's room. That's disturbing. This whole thing is disturbing. And, you know, the gun control people, or the people that are... What do you call the non-gun control people? Is there a word for them?
The National Rifle Association.
I guess the NRA people. They say... We're not living in an ideal society, and therefore we have to have the right to protect ourselves by carrying arms. But it takes a situation like this to make you realize that the logic is actually reversed, and that these NRA people are the ones thinking that we live in some kind of ideal society where the average citizen can be trusted to carry these things. Where we can literally pass out guns to everybody who wants them and expect nothing to happen. Expect everybody to act reasonably and not go around shooting their neighbors over the length of their grass or something their dog did. And if that's not living in an unrealistic world, I don't know what is. So clearly the problem goes beyond what's happening here at Stony Brook. It's part of a much bigger problem. And... that has to be addressed as well. You can't expect to solve that problem right here, but we can join other voices around this country and maybe get somewhere. Our number is 632-6901. What do you think, especially if you're on campus, if you're freezing in the dormitories, please give us a call. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. I actually don't live on campus. I don't go to the college, but... I do happen to go every now and then. I take a class there, and I like to go to activities and stuff like that, like the Fall Fest concert that's coming up, things like that. And saying that what just happened really ticks me off, because, you know, you get a feeling that now I'm going to be looked at differently, and I'm going to be the one who's going to get the weird glances and things like that. And I don't know, it's just not fair.
No, it's not. It's definitely not fair. But what else can we do?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering what's going to happen during the Susie concert. I mean, that's going to be big.
Susie and the Banshees, yeah.
That's going to be very big. And
well, there are a lot of concerts this year, and a lot of them cater to off-campus crowds because they just wouldn't pay for themselves if only people from on-campus were allowed to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a major problem right there.
But, you know, what are you going to do? You can't, I really don't think that arming the security force is going to be good. I mean, I don't know if this, I don't really know the security force, but what was going through my mind was the Thompson Square thing.
Yeah, where police, how shall we say, overreacted or just reacted strangely.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that would happen on campus, perhaps, if you did arm.
Well, it depends on the level of animosity that exists between students and authority figures. At the moment, I'm not quite sure what that level is. There always are a few agitators on both sides. And it certainly has been worse than it is now, whatever it is. But I don't see how it could get any better with the introduction of deadly weapons.
Yeah.
On either side.
I mean, for me, it would look like an armed camp more than a college.
Uh-huh.
About gun control, I think it's kind of funny that our nation's leader is a member of the NRA while his press secretary sits in his office with part of his brain gun in his defense.
Uh-huh. Very true. Very true. It takes quite a mind, even after you're shot by somebody, to continue believing that, you know, no gun control is best for everyone.
I got a piece of mail from our friend Bush saying, Mike Dukat, or do you want to go into this, or do you want to stay on?
I think we better stay on this. I think I got the same piece of mail today, though. What is it, promise or threat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that one, too. I think almost everyone did. But we'll, there's plenty of time to talk about that in the coming weeks.
That's true.
Thanks for calling.
Sure.
The issue of just what kind of crime exists on campus and whether it justifies introduction of guns is something that's been going on for years. I remember talking to Curtis Sliwa, who's the head of the Guardian Angels, once he came onto campus, and I was reporting for one of the campus media things, maybe even for USB, I forget which. And I asked him, "Hey, Curtis, what do you think of public safety, the campus police here having guns?" And he was really dead set against any such thing. He just said that would make the situation so much worse. And when you consider that these are the people that defended Bernie Goetz, for him to say that was, it surprised me. It really did. It made me think, well, if these people think it's a bad idea, maybe we should really reconsider any possibility of it. But let us know what you think. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, I think that it's a very, very interesting program. It's quite shocking. I confess, I really didn't even know anything about the incident of Stony Brook until I just happened to hear your show tonight. And it's very, very disturbing. And yet at the same time, it does not surprise me. I know that there had been a number of incidents before where it's been very, very serious situation. I remember not too long ago about one fellow who just simply, I could just say, went nuts with his shotgun and started shooting at students. As a matter of fact, I believe he fired into one of the shots was right into the dormitory. And again, a few years back, and there had been a few incidents in the meantime of one group coming in on a party and virtually raiding it. They got out of there so fast that they were finally only intercepted by Brooklyn North.
Uh-huh.
And they shot right out of Suffolk County so quickly, went right through Nassau County so quickly that, they were tagged. I mean, you know, it was just a matter of where to get them. But I am thinking that probably an elite unit of trained emergency response might be a solution. Now, the whole idea with that is you certainly don't want to end up having people hurt and, God forbid, people killed, students or whoever who's visiting the campus. It's a very, very sorry state of affairs, but hearing also that a few students have to actually quiver behind a patrolman's car, luckily happened to be there at the time. Yes, I guess I wouldn't blame them. I'd do the same darn thing myself, if, especially hearing gunshots going off and things like that. The Very interesting program. Now, the one thing I'd like to mention quite briefly, just to sort of educate people. The original tradition in America was the right to keep and bear arms, but times have long ago changed. But the time that that was written was a totally different era. About we're talking about the 1750s, the 60s, the 1770s, when people never knew who was coming up the road, who was friendly or unfriendly, any raiders or anything like that. It was a very, a whole different epoch, if I could say. So a lot of the people at the NRA, yes, they will scream it's the right to keep and bear arms, but at the same time, what I think that a lot of people should know is that it's been quite a change since then. I mean, all we have to do is look at the example of the Wild West, as unfortunately I understand even in Russia they're completely horrified, bewildered, fascinated, and shocked, as well as the Japanese, with the Westerns.
Uh-huh.
Never, you talk about warfare. Well, what happened in the West is a case where sidearms were freely given out, and so many people were killed, and so many instances of violence that really it's absolutely ridiculous and ludicrous as to some of the things that happened. I think that there was, I don't recall the name of one man who simply killed somebody else because he was snoring in his sleep and it disturbed him. Now, the problem of present day, yes, I think that unfortunately, and it's a heck of a thing to say, especially with the university system, with modern times, and higher education, you always try to look for the higher and the good. But I guess, unfortunately, you have to deal with the, some of the realities where these creeps, gutless creeps, really, I guess it's got to be a security thing. I guess they never got their teddy bears when they were kids or something, or they were probably dropped, you know, by their mommies or something. But anyhow,
who are we talking about?
People that evidently somehow just come onto the campus that really, first of all, they're not even students.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I should stress in just about every case that I have read about in the last 5 or 6 years. The perpetrators have not been students. They have been people who have come from off campus and done these horrible things.
Well, unfortunately, there were there are groups and individuals roaming. You don't know what their intentions are, and unfortunately, it may not be very, very good. And I think that this is a situation that has to be looked at. And I understand that you don't want to try to have something that's provocative, like armed security or blatantly open armed. I could sort of see that, but I think that the realities of life demand a trained emergency immediate response, and I'm talking about unfortunately a situation where you have to have some hard hitters.
Uh-huh. Do you mean people that would be on campus or part of Suffolk County Police?
I would think that probably not just... I think that Suffolk County definitely, but even the university system might even want to even think about that. It was very interesting because I had... I don't really know what the Office of the President, how he stands on this, because I personally made some phone calls to the President's office to try to get some sort of a response, especially with the, I remember it was, I believe it was just a couple of years back that somebody did go crazy, absolutely crazy with, I think it was a rifle or a shotgun or something like that, and
uh-huh.
The students, needless to say, are totally defenseless.
Uh-huh.
And vulnerable.
Well, as you know, I mean, should they be any other way? Should they be walking around with weapons too? Of course, students are going to be defenseless.
Yeah. The thing is that I think that I can understand how maybe the office of the president doesn't want security armed because he doesn't want people to feel that they are living in a
police state?
Yes.
Well, plus face the fact that it's very bad publicity for the university. People don't want to go to a school that has situations like this. Their parents certainly don't want them to go to a school where it's been publicized that that the security has to be armed. And I know many, I don't know if many is the right word, but certainly several members of the campus security force have in the past gone on record and in many cases have gone off record saying that there is a cover-up in the number of crimes taking place, specifically a number of rapes and robberies and other kinds of incidents in an attempt to keep public relations nice and rosy. Now, I don't know how true that actually is. You get that kind of accusation many times in situations like this, but it's something else to throw into all of this.
I think that a good screening of some kind, I think definitely there are, you know, I understand that, as you had been mentioning earlier, there is a good possibility that this group, whoever they were, whatever they were, broke out through a chain link fence or something like that. And okay, the whole idea of having someone in a guard booth is an idea, also makes them very vulnerable, unless there's some sort of backup or checkup system and stuff like that. The idea of communication is extremely crucial. Immediate response, I think, is probably the only alternative where you have something that might be able to, well, if you have units that can respond to an emergency, if someone gets into, let's say, an accident or they need medical help, unfortunately, you might need, it doesn't, I'm not talking about having, you know, millions of cars, like, you know, armored cars or tanks or anything like that, far from it, but maybe some sort of an immediate response control group that might be able to at least deal or curtail or at least check the situation or and then give probably aid to the other police departments should that need arise. But, of course, their first objective is the safety of the students. I mean, I'm not proposing that they go in.
Better communication is something that that all sides agree has to be worked on, communication between the campus police force and the outside police force. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, 632-6901 is our telephone number. If you have any thoughts, opinions, comments on safety on the Stony Brook campus, or if you're from another campus and they do it differently there, let us know. If you're just an outsider that is curious about all of this, please call us, 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Good evening. Thought I would never get through.
Well, a lot of people think that, but usually they do get through.
Well, I had a few thoughts to share with your listeners on the wonderful subject of gun control.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that one of the big problems that we have with the people who talk about the right to bear arms is that people have this problem with perception in that they perceive two kinds of weapons. They perceive that there are offensive weapons and defensive weapons. You know, offensive guns and good guns, just like they say there's offensive missiles and defensive missiles. And the fact remains that they're all the same thing. They're all something that's designed, you know, in the terms of the guns, they're designed to shoot a bullet out and hit somebody. There's no defensive value in it. You know, they don't stop other bullets from flying. And the problem is that people somehow have this idea that there's defensive guns and that a gun is going to protect you, and that's simply not true. If someone who has a gun isn't necessarily going to be scared because he sees you have one, if you even have a chance to bring it into play in any way at all. Two guns, it doesn't make, you know, the environment safer than one gun. If you have two guns, then in fact, I would say the chances are twice as likely that something's going to happen. And if you want an example, I mean, think of how many anecdotes there are about people getting shot with a gun in an argument, or you know, people who have a legal gun going and doing a crime, and then think of how many anecdotes there are of, you know, man shows gun to mugger, mugger runs away. and it just doesn't make any sense after a while.
Uh-huh. Or mugger overpowers man and uses his own gun to shoot him.
Yeah, that one you do hear about, exactly. And it just seems that if people realize that, you know, more guns does not mean anyone is going to be any safer. In fact, it just means that people are going to be less safe.
Yeah, I think it's an idiotic response, very much like the arms race is an idiotic response.
It's a very good comparison. More weapons doesn't make you safer, because weapons are not defensive. Weapons do not stop other weapons. All they do is they're meant to harm. They are not, you know, I mean, if you have a gun, it's not like you can shoot the other guy's bullet out of the air or something. It's just absolutely ludicrous.
Right, maybe we need some sort of Star Wars for people with guns or something. I don't know, some kind of anti-ballistic missile. But perhaps you could shed some light on why we're seeing such an upswing in Uzi use. What's going on here? Any idea?
Well, I'm not exactly sure about Uzi use. I haven't actually heard the details of this incident on the campus. I don't know if it was actually an Uzi or not. And I think...
No, it was an Uzi-style weapon, and that's how it's been described.
Perhaps, you know, there's a slight overgeneralization there. I believe that actually there are a number of weapons available which at least resemble an automatic weapon, but have somewhat less power. I guess I don't know.
I know very little about guns. An automatic weapon is one which what?
Well, when you an automatic weapon is one in which you depress the trigger and it fires continuously until you stop depressing the trigger.
Now, what possible use other than killing many people could something like that have?
Getting rid of old phone books is the only thing I can think of. There really is no use. That is a weapon for killing people and it has no other use.
And these things are sold in stores in Port Jefferson.
No, I don't know about that either.
That was a Newsday. That was a Newsday. I read that in a column.
Okay, it was my impression that you could not buy automatic weapons in an ordinary store, but perhaps you can. Or if not, you can buy a semi-automatic version, which would be something that you have to press the trigger once for each shot without cocking it in between. And my impression is that a semi-automatic weapon, it's not too difficult to convert it to a full automatic form.
Uh-huh.
But I just wanted to stress this idea that if there's anybody out there who is in favor of this right to bear guns, and perhaps they're a fan of old Wild West movies themselves, just picture the events that happened on the campus this weekend. And so someone is standing there with an Uzi or Uzi style or whatever the heck it was, shooting at the windows. Somebody else there has a gun. What difference is this going to make? What were they going to do? Take out their gun and blow the guy away? Should every person have this decision power? And obviously that might be their best case scenario, but I mean, what else can happen? Well, they can miss. They can hit somebody else. There's more bullets flying around. Nothing is any better.
And if there's any more than one person with a gun on the other side, you have a free-for-all very quickly.
Exactly. You have one person standing there shooting windows, somebody else pulls out a gun, and suddenly you have people shooting at people. Now, in terms of public safety, having guns, well, this is a different idea. Obviously, the people in public safety, you can't expect them to do too much. If you say, there's some people over there in one of the quads firing some automatic weapons, why don't you go, talk harshly to them? You know, you can't expect them to.
Well, now, what they're supposed to do is as soon as a gun is introduced into the situation in any form, they're supposed to immediately notify Suffolk County Police, and Suffolk County Police is immediately supposed to come onto campus and deal with the situation.
Right.
That should not take very long.
It shouldn't, but, it's unclear to me exactly how the logistics of that work. It seems to me that one conceivable solution would be for there to be weapons available for a selected group of public safety personnel, but not to be carried at all times, because everyone is human, and the problem is that having a gun is an implement which tends to give people a feeling of power. People feel differently when they have a gun with them than when they don't, and it could obviously lead to incidents.
Especially in a campus situation where logic doesn't always dictate
exactly.
What you do.
And there, before long, I could clearly see an incident arising where a gun was used where it had no business being used. But perhaps if there was a locked cabinet where guns could be obtained to handle a situation where people were armed and were being belligerent, towards people, not backing down or not running away.
that situation has been raised, where there would be a gun locked up in public safety's office, and under certain special occasions, it would be unlocked and taken out.
Of course, what this would have to involve also would be, I believe, a certain amount of increased training, because my impression that one of the biggest problems with arming peacekeeping officers is that if they're not sufficiently trained and comfortable and accustomed to using a weapon, that things can just very easily get out of hand.
Uh-huh. Well, from what I understand, there are public safety officers that have received as much training as Suffolk County officers. It's just that their job description is slightly different, in that one is defined as a peace officer and one is defined as a police officer.
I see.
Anyway, we're going to go to some more calls. Thanks very much for calling.
Oh, you're welcome, Eric.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Didn't take too long. It's Jim Doomsday today.
Hi, how are you?
This guy with the guns. Remember, if guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns.
If guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Well,
it isn't much different than the Wild West. I don't agree with him at all. He doesn't live in my neighborhood. He should move over here.
Well, now, you mean you wouldn't feel safe in your neighborhood without a gun?
Our house was broken into once, and I was face-to-face with the guy.
Uh-huh.
I didn't make it to the gun, but I had a bar on my hand, and I chased him down a block with that. But let me tell you, this neighborhood is not a good neighborhood.
Well, now, you said you didn't make it to the gun, and that's an interesting point, because many people can't make it to the gun in time. So what is the point of having it? What if he got to the gun first?
See, that's what they wanted to do, from what I understood. They wanted to break in and get that gun.
So they knew you had a gun. Yeah. They wouldn't have broken in if you didn't have a gun. Don't you see?
But it was hanging on a wall. It was just a rifle. They wanted that. Neighborhood stinks, Eric. This isn't, remember, like I said, everything is increasing towards disorder, entropy, you know. Everybody's got to face it. With a lot of people in the world now, and the more people you have, the more disorderly it's going to become. And these are the facts, and things are not going to get better, they're only going to get worse.
Well, I don't think we should push them and make them worse. I mean, maybe things will get worse, but let's let nature do that for us. You know, it's bad enough without us messing it up more.
You cannot go through Carlton Park in your car without having people run right out into the street in front of you and try and sell you drugs. You can't. You tell me, I think it's a good idea to have a gun in this neighborhood.
Well, I don't understand what I mean, someone trying to sell you drugs, trying to wash your windshield, it's not an excuse to have a gun. What are you going to do, blow them away if they offer you a bad price or something?
Just gives you an idea of the tone of the neighborhood, you know, it's just not good around here. You know, I went to a deli tonight, and a guy came running up to me and tried to sell me food stamps so he could get liquor. You know, this neighborhood is just not great.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's called life. Those are the things that happen to you as you as you go down the street of life. I mean, I don't see how having a gun is going to make things any better. It's just going to make you into a more hostile person, and people will view you as a threat.
The Constitution was a good idea for everybody. If they want to have a gun in their house, to have a gun in their house.
Yeah, but as we were saying before, that was a completely different time and a completely different situation. I don't think it's at that stage, and I certainly hope it doesn't get to that stage.
Well, what do you want to have?
Certainly not, but I just think that certain things are best left untouched.
I don't know, but just remember, if guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have them. I believe that.
Well, then we can clamp down on the outlaws then.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Because now if everybody has guns, it's a lot harder to get rid of the threat. If only outlaws have guns, fine, let's go after the outlaws.
Well, I'm not fighting with the NRA, you gotta understand that, because I don't really like these guys who go out and hunt animals for game. I always hated that, because as my own self, I don't like to kill a bug if it's not in my food or it's not hurting me, because I just think that everything has a right to live.
Well, I agree with you there, but believe it or not, that is their legitimate claim to fame there, the right to be able to hunt animals. You know, it's in this day and age where there are so few animals to go around, it seems kind of cruel and stupid, in fact, but
Well, it's good for the population. Some people, they shoot each other, and this way it helps keep the population down.
Well, that's not a very humanistic approach there. But,
no, it isn't, but it's a fact. There's so many people around. Let the criminals shoot each other.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'll see you.
What do you do with a guy like that? 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
It's kind of amusing to see that guy says he doesn't want to hurt a bug, and yet he wants to keep a gun in his house.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
Well, I wonder if he realizes that if he actually shoots somebody that's breaking into his house, if he can't prove that he was in imminent danger of being shot or killed, that he is a criminal.
Yeah, look what
jail.
Look what Carl Rowan is going through right now.
Yeah, so, you know, I just personally transferred to Stony Brook from Michigan State University.
Uh-huh. Which campus?
That's in East Lansing.
East Lansing. I was at the Ann Arbor campus not too long ago.
Right, that's University of Michigan. But at Michigan State, the Department of Public Safety carry guns.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they just got issued some really nice six-hour semi-automatics. But I'll definitely tell you that the situation on campus there certainly isn't any more safe than it is out here.
It's no more safe?
No, not at all. Having the DPS carrying guns is definitely not a solution to the problem, especially our DPS. I don't know where you got your information about the training they receive, but I'm very familiar with the training for the Suffolk County Police Department.
Uh-huh.
And I do know that, you know, when you are an actual police officer, you know, you're trained intensively in the use of your firearms, and you have to qualify every year. The training doesn't stop. You know, if you have a bunch of firearms locked away for very occasional use by DPS, you know, if you're going to give somebody a gun, they've got to be able to use it just right.
Uh-huh.
You know, that would be a definite problem with our DPS. They're definitely not, I've had enough experience with them. I'm originally from Stony Brook growing up. And I've had enough experience with them in the past that, you know, they do not quite cut it as police officers. I'd be really worried if they... I think definitely the only way to solve the problem is to have better communication between the Suffolk County Police.
Yeah, I think communication is at the heart of any of these matters. But again, when you say that, you know, campus police just don't cut it, aren't you generalizing a bit?
Sure. But when you're talking about something like giving them deadly physical force, you have to judge from the low, you know, or you know, the lowest common denominator. Well, maybe not the lowest common denominator, but I mean. I'd just say if you were going to give them deadly physical force, you would have to go all the way. Really can't do it halfway because these people have to constantly be up on what they're doing. You know, and I see a big difference in the way that they carry out their role between that and the way that Suffolk County carries out its role. You know, I would much prefer seeing a better communication system between them and letting Suffolk County take care of the really tense and hazardous situations. You know, I'd feel a lot more comfortable that way. Unless you're going to totally restructure it and retrain them and make them police officers, which they're not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting thought. What is it that we need to make things safe? Now, do you live on campus now?
I live off campus.
You live off campus. Do you think the campus is safe now?
I think it's safe. You know, any place where you have a large group of students, lately, you know, what you brought out before about automatic weapons, it's true that, like, within the last year, it's gotten crazy. They just had an incident up at Michigan State University where a very similar incident where a minority fraternity party was happening, and there was a large group of people came up from Detroit, and automatic weapons, all of a sudden shots fired, and, you know, they never found out, you know, exactly what happened. Fortunately, nobody was hurt. But that you see a lot more of that now, I think, mainly because of the drug trade and the crack trade that's picked up. That really, I think, brought automatic weapons into the, you know, the younger generation. They became more accessible, and they're not legal for sale, but it is very easy to convert a semi-automatic into an automatic. And you can also, you know, the black market trade is pretty open right now.
That's certainly true, and it's that's real disturbing.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of the problem. But I don't think the Stony Brook, I definitely wouldn't say the Stony Brook campus is, it's at least as safe as the Michigan State University campus. Granted, you have 50,000 students going to Michigan State University.
Uh-huh. Well, you have close to 20,000 here, and about 10,000 of them live on campus. So you do have situations now and then that get kind of tense. But as you say, it hasn't quite reached that stage. And
I mean, I think you can. I think we can agree that. I mean, you generally feel safe walking on campus. I don't think anybody, you know, has an overwhelming sense of fear.
Well, it depends on the individual. Some people really can't handle this kind of thing. But I just don't know if what sound like simple solutions will abate those fears at all.
I think it's a trend. I think it's a serious trend that's happening, and I think it's not just a Stony Brook issue. I think it's a issue all on campuses, especially all across the country.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's something that we've got to figure out. You know, it's got to be addressed. But I agree. I don't think there's any clear-cut, simple answer.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling.
Sure.
Bye-bye. 632-6901. If you're on campus, 269-01. We're talking about violent incidents, gunfire on the campus at Stony Brook. And what do we do? How do we react? How do we respond? And are we safe? Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, hi, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Adam.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Okay.
Is your voice changing?
No, I have like a stuffed up nose. And a...
Oh, there's a lot of that going around, you know.
Yeah, also, this is about the guns, right?
Okay.
Like, for example, Hunter, you said there about animals, there are so few of them to go around.
Yeah.
Which isn't true, because, for example, the NRA, for example, they do support a lot of things that some people don't agree with, but they don't only lobby for handguns, they lobby for civil rights in general.
They lobby for civil rights in general?
But the constitutional rights, yeah. Not as much as not like the ACLU about, you know, like, you know, defend every Nazi and God knows what else.
Well, now the ACLU has a lot of problems with some of the people that they defend. They're forced to defend them, though, because I saw a quote somewhere where they say lots of times we have to defend these scuzzbags. That was from the New York Times. And we have to defend these people because they're the ones that test the system. I can't picture the NRA standing up
that,
for people's rights.
The right to bear arms is constitutionally guaranteed, just like all those.
It's as outdated as the Star Spangled Banner, though, don't you think?
I don't know why you think the Star Spangled Banner is outdated.
Well, that's another show, then. We won't get into that now.
You said there aren't enough animals to ground. Meanwhile, unless they're hunting, their deer have no natural enemies. Because
their natural enemies have been wiped out by us.
No, because 150 years ago, even before that, since the pilgrims started landing here, they used to have bounties for wolves that you killed. You got a certain amount of money every time you killed a wolf, and you proved it.
Yeah, but people are still killing wolves.
Well, there are no wolves in New York State really to kill anywhere, except for a couple in there. In protected and game reserves where nobody is allowed to hunt, and they control the population by other means of deer. But for example, with deer, unless people actually went and hunted them, they would eat all their food, because they don't. The way deer think is they don't just say, "Well, I'll eat a little now and I'll save some for the winter." They say, "Oh, there's food here, so I'll eat all of it," and they don't really store it as fat because they just walk around and burn it all off.
Uh-huh.
So, wintertime comes, then there's no food because there are so many deer and not enough food left to feed all of them. So unless people hunted, there would be actually more deer killed by starvation and disease and hunger.
Well, now, I agree with you that certain animals can do more harm to themselves if their population isn't kept under some kind of a control, but I don't think that's an excuse to go out and shoot everything in sight, which is what a lot of people in the NRA seem to think they have the right to do.
Because I have a,
and there's
copy
a lot more
of the
kind
NRA
of animals.
Hunter's Training Guide.
Oh, boy.
Okay. All right, and it's...
I'm worried about you.
No, it's because I qualified as a Boy Scouts, you know, this summer as... under the rifle and shotgun shooting merit badge.
Uh-huh. Are they adding Uzis yet?
No, just 22 caliber rifles that just sound like a cork popping. Anyway, so...
Oh, wow, that's a relief to me.
Guide,
yeah?
The whole thing is you have to... Before you can get a license to hunt, you have to pass the NRA Hunter's safety test, and which isn't very easy. For example, you have to learn how to take apart and clean and take care of and properly handle and safely handle and...
Well, I don't doubt that they try to train people in how to take care of their guns. You know, that's not really the issue here. The issue is, should people be doing this?
I forget exactly how long you have to go to pass this NRA Hunter's safety thing. For several weeks, you have to actually take classes. It's not just like, well, here's a book, study it, and we'll give you a test.
Uh-huh.
And,
Well, now, look, one thing I don't understand. I'd just like to ask this question. The NRA has gone on record as supporting the quote-unquote right of hunters to be able to use Teflon bullets. Now, why in God's name would a hunter need to use Teflon bullets unless the animal he was hunting was wearing a bulletproof vest? What is the point? The only reason for Teflon bullets is to pierce bulletproof vests that police officers wear. Why do they support things like that? It makes me think they're all crazy.
Jacketed bullets still go through 4 bulletproof vests without being stopped.
I'm sorry?
Steel jacketed rounds. A steel jacketed bullet, it depends on the caliber of the gun, but they can go through up to 4 bulletproof vests without being stopped.
Okay.
Just steel jacketed rounds, no Teflon.
Right, but they support Teflon bullets.
Yeah.
There was a move to outlaw them. Why do they support something like that?
Why do they support something like that? Because there are a couple reasons. First of all, let's say you're hunting in the woods, say, right?
Okay.
And you say, oh, wow, there's, let's say, it's bear season. You know, there's a big bear. I can have, you know, some bear.
Yeah.
And a rug. So the guy aims and he shoots. But let's say, for example, some people, they say that hunters should use caseless rounds because they won't go through any bulletproof vest. Meanwhile, all a caseless round is you fire the bullet and little shards of metal go flying out of the gun. A bullet with a case, or either that or a little lead pellet, goes flying out from the charge, which is a lot less humane. Because what happens is when it's flying, the air, you know, it's going through the air fast, and lead isn't known for its hardness, and it mushrooms. And it makes, and if the bullet, let's say, was pretty small, let's say the size of your pinky, by the time it gets into the animal, it'll be the size of your thumbnail, and it'll make a bigger hole than that in the animal.
Well, now...
If you have a steel jacketed or a Teflon jacketed around... what happens is it goes inside the animal and it kills it more painlessly. For example, an unjacketed round, which is just a little lead thing, will hit its skin, maybe penetrate it, and then it'll just either limp away or.
So what you're saying is that Teflon bullets provide a more humane way to kill animals.
Actually, yeah.
That's an interesting logic there.
What happens is. Otherwise, it mushrooms in the air, and then it hits the animal, and then the animal is in great pain, and it dies a while later, until the hunter finds it and has to stab it to death or something.
It would be nice if a criminal, before he shot a police officer, said, you know, this is much more humane doing it this way.
I'm not talking about... this is about hunting.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that in many cases, a great many cases, these... instruments and these bullets are used against people, and especially cases of Uzis. You know, I don't think many people go hunting with Uzis, unless they're at parties.
Semi-automatic Uzis, yeah.
Well, anyway, thanks very much for your comments.
And wait, meanwhile, though, what happens is they mushroom in the air, but the other kind of bullets, the case ones, mushroom after they go inside the animal, causing internal damage, and it just dies pretty much instantly.
Uh-huh.
So it's more painless.
Well,
less painful, or however you want to say it.
I don't know how we wound up talking about bullets exploding inside animals, but...
I think you said before about Teflon bullets and what they should be illegal. Meanwhile, they're actually more humane.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This subject just gets to me after a while, you know? Let's get back to Stony Brook, okay? Stony Brook campus is what we're talking about to start with. Not Teflon bullets and shooting animals and things like that. I know I probably brought it up, but enough of that. There were allegations. I'd like to just go to a letter in Thursday's campus newspaper of Statesman called Rude Answers to the Editor. As you must know, during the early morning of October 9th, there was a shooting incident in Table Quad, the quad in which I reside. At approximately 3:30 a.m., I heard gunshots outside of my building and called public safety at their 333 number. I informed them that there had been gunshots for the last 20 minutes and asked them why no one was responding. They told me that they would not respond and that they were waiting for Suffolk County Police to arrive. I then asked them why public safety was not responding. The officer called me, well, I can't say this word on the air, I can print it in the paper for some reason, but we can't say it on the air. Tell you what I'll do, I'll say it backwards. The officer called me a whole ass. Now, somebody can explain to me why that's unreasonable to say. I'd like to hear it. Anyway, the officer called me that and hung up. I immediately called back and requested an explanation for the officer's actions. The officer told me that he had no time to deal with... Okay, I can't say this one that way because that would still be bad. I'll say this one backwards with the letters reversed. The officer told me that he had no time to deal with my... Tishlub. And again, hung up. This is ridiculous, folks. I then called Suffolk County Police, who at approximately 3:50 a.m. said they were just called, and they responded 15 minutes later. I feel that the officer did not handle himself properly. It would not have been too much trouble for him to explain to a nervous student why he did not hear the sound of sirens to protect him. I believe that the reason public safety opted to not respond was because they were unarmed. This should have been explained to me calmly. Furthermore, if public safety uses this incident to fuel their quest for guns, I would argue that officers with temperaments like the officer I dealt with should not be trusted with deadly weapons. I am requesting that Student Polity conduct a formal investigation of this matter. Students should not be treated in such a manner by those who are here to protect us. Thank you for your time and assistance. That was from a student. And he raises a good point in that... You feel very uncomfortable, and I'm not saying this is just true of public safety or of any group of people, except maybe criminals, but you feel very uncomfortable with a certain kind of person carrying a deadly weapon when you see how somebody acts. And you say, my God, that person is being trusted with a deadly weapon. That person, every time I walk by a cop on a subway train, I say, hey, that guy can just pull out a gun and shoot me. And, you know, someone will probably ask him why he did it later, but the fact of the matter is he still would have done it. He's got the power to do it, and that bothers me. So you better be damn sure that it has to be somebody that I have faith in carrying around these deadly weapons, and not some crazy lunatic person. And I've seen crazy lunatics on the Suffolk County Police Force, so I'm not picking on any one department here. I've had a great deal of difficulty dealing with the fact that some people are allowed to carry these things and encouraged to carry these things. It's especially hard, though, on a campus like Stony Brook, where crazy things happen. I told the story once on the air, where I was in a play with a bunch of people from the Stony Brook Press. You know, newspaper people sometimes put on plays and things like that, and it was a scene from Catch 22, and it involved a court martial scene. I think I was playing a guard, and we were rehearsing, and we had some time before we were on, so we decided to take a break and go over to the Student Union building, play a game of pinball before we gave our presentation. So we, without a second thought, went over to the Student Union building. We didn't want any of our props to be stolen, so we brought our uniforms and our props with us. One of our props happened to be what looked like a machine gun. It looked just like one. It was a plastic one. And we just walked into the union without a second thought. And when we emerged from downstairs after playing pinball, we were informed that the building was now surrounded, and we had better give ourselves up peacefully. Someone had thought we were taking over the Union by force, and of course, once explained, the situation worked itself out. However, we were told that told this by people who worked for public safety, and also by people that worked for Suffolk County Police, that they would have had every right to shoot first and ask questions later. And maybe in the real world that makes sense, but on a campus like the State University of Stony Brook, where people do crazy things like put on plays and walk around in strange costumes, perhaps different rules should apply. And you should realize that this is a place of learning. And in my case, a place where I learned not to do things like that. You have to be a bit more careful in a crazy place like a college campus. Listen to this. The same issue of Statesman, the police blotter. This is an idea of what kind of crimes are taking place on this campus. You read about the Uzis. You read about all kinds of horrible things going on, but this is what's really happening. And it's not pretty, I'll say that. It's not fantasy land. There's some heavy crimes here, but just listen. According to public safety records in the month of September, among the crimes reported were one attempted rape, six cases of exhibitionism, and one sexual assault. The largest portion of crimes fell into the category of harassment, with the second highest number of incidents in petty larceny, followed by those in criminal mischief and burglaries, according to public safety records. The attempted rape occurred on September 8th. The sexual assault was reported by two females who were grabbed by a male while walking across the athletic field on September 16th. The cases of exhibitionism, commonly known as flashing, were reported throughout the month, with two incidents on September 14th. The locations ranged from South P Lot to the athletic field, to Kelly parking lot, to the Health Sciences Center, according to public safety records. Sue Resling, the assistant director of public safety, said that detectives are working on the case now, compiling a photo spread, oh boy, that will be shown to victims in hopes of identifying the exhibitionist. Copies of which are on sale in the Union Art Gallery. The campus community members placed a total of 52 harassment complaints to public safety. You know, somebody should tell Statesman how to spell harassment. I thought it was a typo the first time, but apparently they really think it's spelled that way. The campus community members placed a total of 52 harassment complaints to public safety. 35 of the incidents were complaints of threatening, obscene, or annoying phone calls or phone messages. 3 of the incidents involved a dispute between roommates, and one complaint was made by a person who had been struck with a bunch of roses. 50 petty larcenies were reported in September. 17 of those involved people stealing fire extinguishers. The total number of extinguishers taken was 121. Among other things reported stolen were 2 cases of beer and a potted plant. 23 of the crimes were reported in residential areas, while 27 were in parking lots and in the areas of Main Campus and South Campus. 46 counts of criminal mischief were reported throughout the month. 3 of the incidents involved a vehicle being flipped on its side. 17 incidents involved various damage to cars. 28 of the incidents involved damage to buildings or lights on campus. There was one report of grass being damaged by a cyclist. 35 burglaries or attempted burglaries were reported, according to public safety. The department has no suspects for 33 of them. 20 of the 35 took place in residential areas, while 15 were in the Health Science Center or on Main Campus. Several computer terminals and keyboards were reported stolen, along with a number of watches and various amounts of money. Food was reported missing from a room in the library, and several people were caught absconding with silverware and china from cafeterias. There was one bomb threat reported from the Stony Brook Union on September 4th. The area was searched, and public safety officers found no bomb. There were 5 cases of hit-and-run incidents, resulting in damage to automobiles in lots around the Main Campus, Hospital, and Rothquad. One arrest was made for disorderly conduct in O'Neill College on September 9th, and one sighting of a person with a firearm was placed when a person was seen placing a rifle into the trunk of a car in the infirmary parking lot on September 16th. And that's it for the month of September. It's not exactly headline news, is it? And it's not the kind of thing that would make you feel particularly unsafe walking around this campus. Yeah, things happen. But it's still not like New York City. It's still not like the streets of many towns. It's still a college campus. And I think more importantly than the issue of campus police having guns is the issue of people here taking care of each other and watching out for things that don't appear to be right and being alert and not overreacting. So we'll keep you updated as far as all this stuff goes. The latest we have on the Tabler incident is that the 8 people arrested have gotten bail and a court date. No one has yet been charged with criminal possession of a weapon. So that's it as far as this incident goes. If you have further questions, feel free to call us or to contact the various media on campus, or to just continue talking about it if you're a student or faculty member. It's good to not let these things be forgotten. And that's the show for tonight. What do you think of that, Nick?
Smooth.
Good.
Smooth.
Good outro there?
Great.
I just realized I've read everything I brought with me here today, and we've pretty much talked about this. Do you mind if I take one more call?
Go, babe, go.
Is that okay? Yeah, well, why don't you stay and talk to these people?
Great.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah.
Very interesting program.
Go ahead.
I also heard a lot of your reporting on WBAI. Listen, let me ask you something. Don't you have proctors at the entrances to those dorms there? And, managing sort of the safety on each floor?
The entrance to the dorms?
Yeah,
I believe...
Don't you have somebody keeping an eye on, like, at a desk? Don't you have desks there with...
I'm not sure if they're manned by people. What I believe is the doors are locked after a certain time and people have to use their key to get in, which seems reasonable to me. It didn't used to have to be like that, but, it's like that now.
You don't live in a dorm in Stony Brook, then? Do
you? No, I graduated a few years ago.
Oh, I see. Listen, I think that you have to have the students, some of them, taking training in small arms and guarding themselves. Some just volunteering to have their own... force of guards, that's all.
Armed
you
students?
You have a student rifle club or something? Or
that's a nightmare personified.
You've got to take care of yourselves there, you know. It's,
but do you think that's the way of taking care of yourself?
No, I think so, Eric.
With students? We're talking about kids here.
You got 17-year-old guys going into the Marines.
Well, yeah, that's another problem I have, is dealing with that. Yeah, that's... people are at the peak of their... Well, what's the word for it? Male aggressiveness, then.
That's right.
Testosterone is raging.
So I don't know if you want to be passing out the firearms to students here.
Well, they should take some training, you know.
Uh-huh.
Police train them, you know.
Well, if they're interested in being police officers, that's one thing, but I just...
But the police could train them over the rifle range in small arms, I'm sure.
But the Guardian Angels do a pretty good job without guns.
Yeah.
You know, I think we could all learn something from them.
Problem, I guess, with guys coming in with guns and the incidents, the type of incidents that I've read about in the papers.
Yeah, but do you read about those kind of incidents here at Stony Brook? Yeah, you have the occasional thing that occurred last week at Table Quad.
Yeah.
Really, what we have to address is how are we going to respond to this?
Well, I don't want to seem Victorian, you know, but I think part of the blame is with the co-educational dorms, that all outsiders know that there's a good time to be had in these dorms, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I think somebody picked up on your end.
No, it's not that. I mean, the average blue-collar type kid who's not going to go to college, you know, they're fooling around outside from the time they're 16 on, you know? So I don't say that college kids should remain celibate till they're 21, you know? But to just keep it to a manageable level and to, with a view to the safe, you know what I mean? I think segregated dorms is a good idea, you know? Certain dorms for the girls and certain dorms for the boys, you know what I mean?
Well,
you had
the halls are segregated. The buildings aren't.
You had house mothers, you know, sitting at a desk all night long, and you know, by the front door, you know, and, it was safe, and you had proctors and.
But that was a different time and era. You know, values change, and it would be kind of an artificial existence to continue that kind of setting.
I know. I went to Harper College 30 years ago, you know, and we didn't even have dormitories. We lived in off-campus houses.
Uh-huh.
You know, the house I lived in was two guys in there, you know. Then the next year I moved to an off-campus apartment, and some houses had a lot of students in, you know.
Uh-huh.
I never had, like, guys and girls in the same house, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it can work out. It's not the something to be afraid of.
I think you have to face reality. This is a violent world, and the Suffolk County Police may not be able to always get there in time. You got to have if you know there's going to be a party, you got to have a lot of guys, you know, students who know how to handle themselves, either have clubs or guns or something, you know, ready if there's something where you might anticipate there's going to be trouble. On just normal times, you got to have somebody anyway, at least two guys who know how to. You know, maybe one guy with firearms at the entrance to every dorm, I would say, you know?
Well, it's a thought. Thanks for calling.
See, you bring out outside detective agencies, you know, I don't know, these guys, they don't know nothing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think they're trained as well as the police force, you know? You understand me?
Yeah, well, I think they should be acquainted with the situation.
Yeah, there was an incident over there where they got violent too fast, you know? They started beating the students up, the guys in the private security force, right?
Here?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. It's quite possible, though.
Kelly Dorm.
What's that?
It was in Kelly Dorm.
A private security force?
Or your campus security force.
Oh.
In other words, you're hiring guys to be your security guards who have not the type of guys who would become college students. Now, you got to take care of yourself. You know what I mean? You got to have guys guarding you who are like you, who have mentalities like you. You know what I mean?
Well, I think in a college campus of 20,000 people from all over the world, it's going to be very hard to say who is like us and have some kind of common denominator.
I mean, people who are of an intelligent bent, they got to face the fact that it's a violent world, and you could be prepared to harm yourself and guard yourself.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, what's going on? You know, I'm not in favor of Zionism, what that's doing in Israel by any means, but look what the young people did there. They formed kibbutzes and they armed themselves and they guarded their own frontier.
Yeah, but look what's going on there right now. I don't want to talk about it at all. But thanks very much for calling. Oh, boy. He certainly opened a kettle of fish there.
He did. He should have gone on at about 10:30. My goodness.
We can keep this up all night long, but Brother Nick, you're standing by. What do you got planned for us tonight?
With survival, we'll take lots of requests, and we'll see who's around on campus, and if you're freezing, we'll play something that you can warm up to.
Okay. You heard it here on WUSB in Stony Brook. It's, it's 8 minutes after 12 o'clock. I really,
No sweat.
Go
for the gold. Well, Olympic year.
It's quite a subject. I've got all these newspapers and articles about this this latest event. What makes life exciting, you know?
I hear you. Always never a dull moment here at the Brook.
No, that's true. Well, you know, I'd like to say to everybody out there, the people who haven't gone home because of the heat and hot water outage, something nice like, you know, don't worry, stay happy. But God, I hate saying that these days, you know? I really hate that.
Well, when you have the money that Mr. McFerrin has, you can be that jocular.
Did you hear he was really upset that George Bush adopted that as his campaign song? Because he's a Dukakis supporter. He took exception to that fact.
I'd like to see George do a little reggae thing against Dukakis. Too bad there's no more debates.
Hey, you know, George Bush is a good rapper when he gets started.
You know, it's really sad. What about both a bunch of chumps that we have a choice for in this coming November election?
Did you watch the debate?
I did. I thought...
Did I put that in double quotes and a little italic there?
It was incredible. I don't know. I just... I think I'm going to vote for libertarian this time around.
It's a sad comment, but I don't know. We wouldn't be able to complain, I guess, otherwise.
I don't know. They're both.
No, we'd always be able to complain here.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Let's do it. That's what we're here for.
So we're here for 24-hour complaining. Well, I'll be back again next week, hopefully, and, Brother Nick's got an incredible show planned. Is Brother Bill coming in?
No, Brother Bill is gallivanting around Lower Manhattan this evening.
Oh, wow. What's he doing there?
So we may get a phone call. I think he's eating, I think he's doing Indian tonight. Indian
food.
Hey,
Indian is great, you know.
Yes.
And it's so cheap, too.
It's very cheap, and he's hoping that he can find a restaurant that has English on the menu. So.
Oh, yeah, they all do. Bannon.
That's what I was assuming, right by NYU over there,
yeah.
And the bottom line, it was, it's quite an experience. I think he's going to be calling us from New York City tonight.
Oh, that's great. We can look forward to that. A few years ago, Mike Juhas and I were doing a show on the station, and we called for addressing the fact that there were no Mexican restaurants on Long Island. And now look. Look at all these Mexican places everywhere you look.
Both Eric and Mike are stockholders in PepsiCo, which is the owner of Taco Bell, excuse me.
Well, that's not what we meant. The Taco Bells existed, yes, but that's not what we were talking about.
Real Mexican.
Now, I'd like to, you and me, perhaps, address the issue of Indian places on Long Island. I don't know of any Indian places on Long Island. Certainly not within a throwing distance of here.
Absolutely not. I don't know what the problem is. It should be...
I propose that there be an Indian place that delivers to campus within the next couple of months.
They'd probably do a bang-up business.
Yeah.
They really would.
They would. There's no other place around.
As a matter of fact, I know a couple of people who are doing kind of like a sublet business. They take orders for people on the halls for Chinese food, and then he himself goes to the Chinese restaurant, picks it up, and charges a fee for this.
That's ingenious, but is he on call all the time?
I think he's on call. He literally has hours, I think, from 10 p.m. till 1 in the morning, because there's a particular place that closes late that's takeout.
That's ingenious.
It is. He's probably a history major, but...
It's a good college know-how for you.
It's incredible.
Well, hopefully we're giving people ideas on ways to make life easier around here.
Indian food. All you need is curry and lots of rice.
Indian food is great. Just had it the other day.
Oh, excellent.
Great stuff. Still burning inside me, but I like that kind of thing, you know?
It's great. It's good. It's hot stuff.
It's, you know, passionate.
Yes. That's
passion inside your system. Yeah, you turn into a passionate person, I say.
You do. That's why the Italians are the way they are.
Yeah. Because they eat Indian food all the time.
They eat Indian food. But you think of Indians, they're very placid, calm, you know, reserved. And yet...
Because inside, they're exploding.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Very much. Well, Brother Nick is coming up.
Yeah.
Eric Worley here with you. I'll see you again next week. Take care of yourselves.
Billboard for Sunday, October 16th. You can catch Bob Dylan tonight with Tony Childs at Radio City Music Hall. They'll be there Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Joe Piscopo will be at the West Barron Music Fair tonight, and the Pagan Babies will be at Anthrax tonight. Tomorrow, Monday, Elton John will be at Madison Square Garden on Monday and Tuesday, and Kazumi Watanabe will be at the Bottom Line tomorrow. On Tuesday, Jack DeJohnette will be at the Bottom Line, and the Stray Cats and Lucky Seven will be at the Ritz in Manhattan. On Wednesday, Camper Van Beethoven will be playing at the Union Ballroom here at Stony Brook. Less Active and Velvet Elvis will be at the Ritz, and Robin Ford will be at the Bottom Line on Wednesday. On Thursday, Fishbone and Schooly D will be at the Ritz, and Sister the Manches will be going to Radio City Music Hall. On Friday, Alec and Circus will be coming to Stony Brook for Fall Fest 88. Carla White will be again at the Dining Car 1890, Fishbone, and Schooly D at the Ritz. Jimmy Fordham will be at the World. Lounge Lizards will be at the Bottom Line. Meatloaf at Bay Street. And Susie and the Banshees will be coming to Stony Brook here and playing the gym on the 21st. Sweet Honey in the Rock will be at Carnegie Hall. Will Sexton and Luke Guru at Lone Star Cafe. And we have Zebra and Teaser at Sundance and Bayshore, and Browbeat will be at Heaven this Friday. On Saturday, Bastia and Dan Siegel will be at the Town Hall. Camper Van Beethoven and Scruffy the Cat at the Ritz. Carla White will be at Dining Car 1890. The Delores at the Lone Star Roadhouse. The Instigators and Mind Over Four will be at Anthrax. And Yorma Kalkonen and Rick Denkel will be coming to Stony Brook and playing here at the gym. The Lounge Lizards will be at the Bottom Line. The Paladins at the Lone Star Cafe. And that all happening on Saturday. And some shows coming up in October. On the 23rd and 24th, Yellow Man will be at SOB's in Manhattan. On the 24th, Prince will be at Nassau Coliseum. And on the 26th, Billy Bragg and Michelle Shock will be at the Beacon Theater. And Jimmy Page will be at the Meadowlands. Just reminding you of some great shows coming to Stony Brook, brought to you by the Student Activities Board. Don't miss Camper Van Beethoven on the 19th at the Ballroom. Susan DeManches will be at the gym on the 21st, that's Friday. Yorma Kalkonen will be, and Rick Danko will be at the gym on the 22nd, and the New York Citizens will be at the Ballroom on the 28th. Burning Spear will be at the Ballroom on the 31st, that's Halloween night, Monday, and Fishbone will be playing the Ballroom November 5th, so come down and catch them. This has been the Concert Billboard for WUSB Stony Brook. The billboard can be heard weekdays at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and weekends at noon and midnight. If you missed anything, you can simply call the station here at 516-632-6901.
If you're somewhere in a crowded club in Manhattan and you've just released yet another record, you might well be wondering why you're listening to WUSB. Well, the chances are you aren't, but I am. My name's Robin Hitchcock, and you've been listening to something or other, possibly connected with me or not, but it's somewhere in Long Island, okay? Bye.